1996. This is Tracy Dagan interviewing Phyllis Boje. First, let me start with yourself. What's your name and where were you born?
Let's see, I'm Phyllis Boje and I was born in Netlake, Minnesota.
I was wondering, how about any brothers and sisters and who are your parents?
Yeah, my father is Elvis Straw and my mother was Mary Bonus. And from them too, there was four of us. We lost one brother. His name was Albert Jr. And after the war, my parents divorced and they each married. And my dad had two sons, adopted one. My mother had, she had two that lived, twins that died, and a little girl. So I think she lost me in her side. So that's it, yeah.
How about your grandparents? Where were they from, and how much did you know them?
My grandparents on my dad's side raised us, and after my parents, or during the war, my grandpa, Strong, on my dad's side, took us in. My grandmother was in the sanitarium at the time. She had TB. So my Aunt Annie and my uncles helped my grandpa take care of us. Me and my two sisters, my brother had died. Oh gosh, I can't remember how old he was. Maybe 3 years old when he died. And so they took the three of us in, and my sister Sarah, she must have been just about maybe a year old or something when we moved in with my grandpa.
And what was your grandpa's full name?
His name was George. George John Strong. And my grandmother's name was Rose. I don't think she had a middle name. Rose Beargreese Strong.
Is there any relation to John Beargreese?
Yeah, she's a daughter. And then my other, my mother's side, my grandmother died when I was pretty young. I think Aunt Marge, she was only like maybe 2 years old when her ma died, 2 or 3 years old. And her dad raised her until, I think her grandmother took her in for a while. But I always remember both parents, grandparents. And my grandfather Bonus, I spent a lot of time with him. But all the time I spent with my grandma and grandpa Strong. My grandpa Strong, he came from Namekin area, Captogama area. That's where his mother had came from. And then I believe he went to school here in Tower for maybe 2-3 years or 4 years or something like that. And I think that's where he met my grandmother Strong. She came from White Iron. And her mother had died, so they stayed here at the school all year round.
Would that be that Indian school?
Yeah, that's that Indian school that was here. And that's where Grandpa Strong came to for a while. And they eventually married, and they had a homestead in Net Lake, over at towards Silverdale that way. That's where they lived, and they stayed out there for many years with their kids until their youngest one, Spud, died. I mean, got sick. He's the one that just died not too long ago. But he was a baby, and he got real sick out there, so. And I don't know who they came to stay with while the medicine men were doctoring Spud. And anyway, he got to be well, so then they went back out to the homestead. That homestead was part of their, what do you call it, the land?
Allotments?
Yeah, land allotments. That's where they lived at. And so while Grandma was living in town or at Net Lake Village, she got to like it there. So then that's when she decided she wasn't going to go back out to the homestead. And then they built a house in the village there. But she still had kind of the same things she had out at that homestead. They had a shack there where next to the house where they kept all her dried meat. We had a little cellar. We had gardens all the way around the house, and we had our, I think there was about maybe about four potato patches, one big patch of corn, and one section was vegetables.
Who helped with the garden? Everybody?
Everybody. It was a family garden. All Grandpa and Grandma's kids, and then the grandchildren. We had horses. We had up to 6 horses sometimes, 2 cows, chickens, geese. We raised just about everything we ate or got from the wild. And then Grandpa worked out quite a bit, and I guess that's how we always had like an old truck, transportation to get to town. I remember my cousin Dude calling that old truck here after the Hillbilly show, our clamped truck. So we learned to work from our grandpa, Strong. And my other grandpa, he was a trapper. And I remember when we were real small, I spent a lot of time with them because I was first born. And I remember going to Little Fork, waiting for Grandpa Bonus to come in. And I used to call him Mishumis, and meaning Grandpa in Indian. So anyway, Uncle Ben, he would probably be the oldest that was living at home, would drive Grandpa. My Grandpa Bonus always had a car. And I think due to his trapping, he always seemed to have money. I think a long time ago, the beaver hides like were a dollar an inch or something. And then when we'd go to pick him up, he'd take like 2 canoe trips to go get all of his furs from being out. I don't even know when he would be gone. But all of a sudden it would start turning warm, and we'd go with Grandma Sadie over to Little Fork, and we'd go camp over there. And then there was a forestry road out there. So we used to go camp right at the river. And they had a pulley right across the river from one tree to the other. We spent a lot of time playing on that thing, pulling each other across. My Uncle Gom and Tosh and I were about the same age. And then Benny and Gom are like, sort of like my big brothers, but Marge, she was a baby. And so we spent a lot of time pulling each other across the river and waiting for Grandpa Bonus to come and keep an eye out. And then we'd set net over there, and Grandma Sadie would dry the fish. We'd help her clean them, and we made little racks where she dried them while waiting, because we didn't know exactly what day Grandpa Bonus would be back.
Where would he go?
He went up Little Fork River, and when I go up to Winnie's right now, Highway 11 crosses Little Fork right to that Rainy River. That's how far it goes. So he'd be gone a long time, and I don't know how long we'd even wait for them. I mean, for him to come, and pretty soon we'd see him coming. His canoe would be just, you know, like how rice gets, just barely.
Perfect.
And barely sticking out. Well, then we'd go help him unload. So then he would rest up overnight there, and then he'd have like they call green fur. It'd be wrapped up in balls, and then they would. I didn't know what Grandma Sadie was doing too all the time. There she was making racks. After we made the fish rack, she's still carving, cutting little. Some kind of willows and making round hoops, and then that's where they strung the green hides that Grandpa Roy brought. So then the next day him and Uncle Ben would take off, and there he'd bring another load of hides, and then they'd stay there and dry those ones, because they were out there, they made all the hoops and stuff. And we'd probably stay there maybe another 2 days and continue fishing. And I remember one time we caught two snapping turtles. One was in a trap, and they just put them in a net and left them in there until it was ready to come home. And then we brought them. And I remember Grandma Sadie cooking those, and we were fighting over turtle eggs, and she had cooked one turtle, and then Wynn gave the other one to her mother. So anyway, I remember her hollering at us, "You just don't have to fight over them turtle eggs, there's 16 of them. That's more than enough to eat." So anyway, I got to enjoy them. She was really a good cook. I always remember her making sweet breads, donuts, and making sausage. She used to grind up sausage, I mean meat. And then clean inside of I guess a deer guts or something, and then she stuffed the sausage because she used deer meat. And she had to cook that real slow. And then I remembered her, it must have been just pesty to her anyway, we'd holler, "Grandma, is the sausage done yet?" Because she'd have a whole oven full. She'd say, "I told you, it's going to take all afternoon to cook." But yet, we'd go running in there, couldn't wait for that sausage to get done. It's kind of like a potato sausage. Because she mixed meat, deer meat, spices, and potatoes and onions. That's all I remember what she put in there. But it was kind of like seemed like it would be a potato sausage today, what she cooked. But she really, I think she learned that too, maybe probably from this Indian school, because she went to school here too. Yeah, when I moved to Tower.
But how old were you when you moved to Tower?
When I moved to Tower? Gee, I think we stayed up in Burnside for a while. And then we moved to Duluth. Oh, I don't even know. Maybe we moved here about 2024, when I was 24, 25 or something. But we stayed up in Ely and at Burnside. We stayed there for about a couple of years. And then we moved to Duluth. Then we finally got a house here. But then we couldn't find work here, so then that's why we'd go to Duluth to work. But when I first came here, I found out all my grandparents, one way or another, were connected to different people here. My Grandma Strong, she was related to the Currys, and I think it was through George Curry.
7-1.
And the closest one that she was related to was Mrs. John Savides. And long time ago, all the first cousins were all sisters and brothers. And that's what I had trouble with. I couldn't, because John Savides was related to grandma's dad. I believe he was related to John Beargreaves. For a long time, I thought maybe I don't know if Mrs. Savides, she was related to Grandma, because she's sort of with the Sam clan, and then Grandma Strong over in White Iron, the Sam stayed over there. So whether or not she was related to both of them, I don't really know. But anyway, I would ask this lady, in fact, she came to our house and introduced herself that time and said that that we were a relative of hers, and my grandma, Rosie, geez, I can't think of her name right now, but I always remember that name. She said, that's our close family. She said, your grandmother and me were sisters, and so is my husband, John, or something. And I can't remember his name. I'm forgetting these Indian names. So anyway, Bob was a good friend of their grandson, Wally. Yeah, Big Wally, we called him. And so we spent a lot of time with them people. And I would go help her haul water, wash clothes, or if she was working on something, I would help her. So I would just go maybe spend 2-3 hours over there a couple times a week. If I stayed away too long, then she'd come and get me. She'd say, "What's wrong with you? I've been waiting for you." So I got to spend a lot of time with her. And she was just sort of like my Grandma Strong. I mean, it seemed like you could tell they're kind of related. So then I got to talk to John Savides too. He was the last chief here. And we were talking about the area, talking about where they lived, how he came back and forth, like from Burnside or White Iron. It's not like he lived at White Iron at one time. And he eventually ended up here.
Do you know what happened to his descendants?
I don't even know. Wallace was the only one I knew. His daughters were already dead by the time I moved here. So Big Wall was the only one I knew. But I don't know. And anyway, this lady, where this is where John Berrigues came when he was sick, and anyway, I got a old Ely paper saying that he died here, and that's where he's buried, over by your ma's, because that's where the Sawbees lived, you know, on that kind of little hill as you make the curve into your ma's. On top there was their house. Anyway, Grandma Strong and Grandpa Strong were living at their homestead at that time, Silverdale, I guess at the time when he died. And they came by, caught the train, I guess, in Gien, and got onto the tower line. I don't know how they did that. Probably, I don't even know. Yeah, there is a train line. I don't know how they came across, but anyway, all I know is they traveled by train, because seemed like that old track would just go to Ely and Tower. That old train track was there for a long time. And I suppose it did hook onto the Virginia line someplace, but that's how they traveled here, and then they waited for Grandma Strong to get here before they buried her dad. And then Grandma's sisters too were living in White Iron yet. She had Mary Buskey over there, and I think Annie, or one of them, or Elizabeth, one of them were still alive at the time anyway.
So there's quite a few living up in White Iron there?
Yeah. There must have been a whole tribe there, too. Because they talked, and then at Burnside, and then Basswood. You got some people that lived here that were from Basswood. And then I believe, too, remember old Gramps? When we seen a place up in Isabella River, him and his great uncle come and paddle from Nip Lake and stayed there. And I believe that old man's name was Joe Whiteman. He lived up in Isabella River there. And it sounded like there was logging going on. There's all railroad grading there too, where they hauled out all the logs. But my Grandpa Roy too, he was raised by his uncle. His name was Jim Bonus, and we used to call him Pigo. Why we called him Pigo, I don't know, maybe that was just his nickname. But he raised three of his nephews, and they came from Captogama. That's where Grandpa Roy grew up. Until I suppose his parents died. But anyway, Pigo, they ended up at Pelican Lake, and that's where he raised his nephews. One was John Whiteman, and another one was Tony Harding. So anyway, that old man kept them until the school come and got them, or the bring them to Tower School here. So what happened to all their mothers, you know, I don't really know. Or, you know, their parents, how come they had to end up with their uncles. Mm-hmm. And I think there was another one too that, I don't know, it sounded like, Pigo had like five kids that were all from different mothers, and but they were all first cousins. He was all, sound like all he had. I mean, he didn't sound like he was married. I don't know, he might have been, but he didn't have any kids, only his nephews. So anyway, that's where Grandpa Roy came from. It's not like he spent a lot of time in Captogama. They were related to the Gull boys up there. And I remember too him telling me that they used to come to Little Rice River. Vermilion River? Is it Little Rice? Vermilion River. Yeah, that's up there where we go. That's where they would come. He did a lot of trapping there, and then they would pick rice there. And then it was another river I can't think of, where they would pick wild rice. And that must have been prior to moving to Pelican Lake.
Where else did they get the wild rice from? Up in that lake and here? Or?
Before they had to move to Net Lake, I think that's the only place I heard them say where they used to pick at is Vermilion Lake River. But after moving to Net Lake, I don't think they really had to go any place after that, because that lake used to be just like a big wheat field out there. They had more rice than they could get. Yeah, and it's only Grandma Sadie's ma came from Pelican. It's not like they were there all the time. And because I would, being a kid, I was used to be just nosy. Third degreeing everybody where they came from and try to find out. And then I remember getting my great grandma mad and I said, you know, where did you come from before, you know? And that lady, she was married three times.
One call, party reporting one just went off into the ditch, southbound 53.
So anyway,
north,
because I know one of my great grandmother used to call her Loggy. She married one of Grandpa Strong's brothers, Charlie Strong, his name was. So I wondered, you know, as long as she married Grandpa Strong's relative, if she was from Nanakin. And I used to look at the map and wonder, you know, holy, there's a big area that they all came from. So I wanted to know their history. I remember I was the same way when I moved here. And got to talking like with John Sobeys and his wife, and then he told me, he said we never, a lot of people never came from anywhere. He said we lived here all the time, and like this point, I think it was called after Chief Sucker, and then it was called Sucker Point. So a lot of the old people that I talked to here, they didn't really come from anywhere, that they were just descendants of the lake here. And then John Sobeys, he was saying, yeah, he said we were known as, he said, what you would call the renegades. And I thought, boy, that's really great. So when we were meeting, like with Don Chosa, I was telling him about talking to that old man, and he said we liked ourselves to be known as the renegades. I said, boy, isn't that great? You know, because they defied the government. A lot of the people didn't move to Net Lake, I guess, for about 2 years, and then some people wouldn't move, and then they didn't get allotments up there. They ran short, and what the government provided was a 14-mile square, and everybody got an allotment up there, and then they still ran short, so then they didn't put any more land out, so the people just stayed around here because they have trading posts too. So they never left the area. But I remember getting my father-in-law mad by being so nosy all the time. And I wish, you know, I could have recorded a lot of the stuff when talking to these old guys. Well, they still had a recorder when a lot of them were kind of old. And just to sit and listen to them talk. And then some of the people, I would find out where they were, where they lived at as kids. And then I guess I talked about all of them, huh?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they built the school, the Indian school here rather than in Net Lake?
Oh, geez, I don't even know why. I think because this was a good area, and then there was, at the time, a lot of kids, or a lot of Indians around here. Yeah, and I think this was the tower, I suppose, was the first place where the white men came, where the lake was big. Geez, I don't know, really.
Do you know of any connections between Fond du Lac Indians and Vermilion Indians?
The only thing I know is that they came to school here. And then it seemed like we're all connected one way or another. Everybody has, used to have relatives, like a lot of the porters, I think, come from Fond du Lac. And yet there's porters up at Grand Portage too. And I think the closest the people here are related to is the Basswood people and then the Lac La Croix people besides Net Lake. But I don't remember too many being from Fond du Lac.
How would they get from Lac La Croix to Vermilion? By Portage and in?
Through the lakes. Yeah. I think Lake Vermilion was one of the highways of the canoe. You could go all four directions from here. So we got a, you know, it was easy, like, to go up to Canada to connect on to the big lakes up there. And then you could get here from here to Grand Portage. You could get down here from here to Fond du Lac, or, you know, the river. If you look at a map, sometimes you can see all the connecting trails where you could even go west from here. Yeah, a lot of times when I go along Highway 11, you know, I always think about my Grandpa Roy, because that's where I think that river ends, is Little Fork. And you see one of those bridges, and I often wondered how far he went, you know. But then you could see how that river goes, like to, we go far as War Road, and then you come into that big lake area. So you could travel a long ways. Once you hit those rivers like Nanakin, and you look along between U.S. and Canada, you can see where they had waterways all over. And then they had like a village up at Nanakin. Not Nanakin, yeah, but I can't think of it. Saginaw. And that's where they were saying that John Bear Grease's mother came from. Anyway, I guess there's Indians that still live up there. And some of them stay on the U.S. side depending on the season, and then they move to the Canadian side depending on the season. So someday before I get too old, I'd like to go up there and look around.
What would be a typical day for you when you were growing up?
Swimming. But we did a lot of work when we were young. We had to tend the gardens, feed the chickens, help grandma, or the geese. And then too, like in the summertime.
Did you go berry picking?
Yeah, we had to berry pick. We did all the blueberries and choke cherries, pin cherries, and then help grandma clean them, and then she would make jam. And then too, when we had cows, we used to go, we'd have to wash the bottles and take milk to different people that would buy milk from us and run milk around in the morning. So depending on the season, it seemed like we always had something to do. But I always remember having time to play and stuff. Enough time to get into trouble, being disciplined. Grandpa never got hit or anything when we were, but he would talk to us and tell us to go sit upstairs or something and to think about what we'd done or give us extra work. Yeah, we used to do something like that. Grandpa would really be hurt. I remember 1 year or two, they used to have a thing where when the new year came around, you went around house to house, happy new yearing everybody. And then you'd get candy or food, kind of like tricks or treating. You'd go in a house. So anyway, these Joe Sock, his wife, and he had two daughters. And anyway, Grandma was sort of a cousin to Joe Sock too. So anyway, that old man used to, and his wife used to come over and visit Grandpa and Grandma. So anyway, this one New Year's, all of us grandchildren, we went over there to Happy New Year them, and then they each gave us some sugar candy. And they were pretty good sized pieces. So anyway, after we got home, we ate that. That's the first thing we ate was some brown sugar candy. And although we had like apples and oranges and stuff like that, we ate that. So I don't even remember whose idea it was at the time. Well, let's go borrow some of y'all's clothes and go over there again so we can get another brown sugar. So anyway, that's what we did. We went and borrowed, and we went Happy New Year then. And a couple of days later, Grandpa would come back from over there. He was just mad. And then he said, I don't know what your grandchildren. They came over here the second time, he said, but with different coats. They must have thought we wouldn't recognize them. And Grandpa, you're just so excited, mad. He said, how could you think they would not know you? I said, well, they come over here all the time. Being greedy. That little bird is pretty out there. Yeah, like when it come to ricing too, Grandpa was the first one to have a thrasher. And yet, Grandma and him, your grandma, when she married into the Chicago family, I always remember that they had a great big pan. You know, that's the kind of pans we use now for parching. And boy, I remember telling Grandpa, I said, "Holy Grandpa, you better come down there, come to Chicago's." I said, "Go look at that ricing pan. You can do a lot." Because we used to parch rice all day and kind of late into the evening and parch at those kettles. And Grandpa finished a lot of rice for a lot of people. So we went over there and looked at that big pan. And he said, "Well," he said, "I'm going to go to town tomorrow." He said, "We're going to have two of these things." So anyway, he asked if he could take the measurements, and they told him, "Go ahead." And boy, that pan was really nice. It was just like a baking pan. You couldn't even see the seams. And it had an edge on it, you know, kind of a beaded edge all the way around, like a regular baking pan. But they brought that from Canada somewhere. So anyway, we started, as soon as Grandpa went to, I don't even know who he had make those, but he brought a real heavy metal one. I think he had like two different kinds. And then we would still use that little one for small batches, but mostly we took two of us, would be four of us always parching. And then trying to lift those big things out, we'd have to take four of us to lift them because they were real heavy metal. But I remember too, before he got a fan, or we used to have to fan rice, and then he'd put it on a cannabis tarp, and he'd say, "Well, you can fan rice here." So anyway, he would come and check where the mazan went and see if there's any rice in there. If there's a lot of rice fell in there, he'd have us re-fan those again. So make sure we didn't spill rice while we were fanning. Took a lot of time before he would let us fan somewhere else. And then I think too, he wanted to say that mazan, they used to use that like kind of like for insulation, and then they'd put it around things that they didn't want freezing, or on top of something, kind of like the sawdust. They used to use that for insulation. But the horses wouldn't eat that. We always had horses. And then the fishing, I remember resenting fishing. We used to go set a net in that lake. We'd do two of them. And we set net to eat the fish. So everybody would be playing ball up at the ball field. We live close to the ball field. And Grandpa would say, "Well, let's fix those nets and get a couple of nets off tonight." And we'd always set net before the sun went down. And you had to tie a rock and then a float on one side. So anyway, I learned how to do that real quick. And I used to paddle Grandpa all the time, and then pretty soon he would. He said as long as I knew how to fix the net, I should start learning how to set it. So that's what him and I did, and I sometimes resent going up there when I could be playing ball. And he said, "You know, this is going to help you. You know, when you get married, you're going to know how to, you won't starve, you'll always be able to catch fish, and always be able to eat fresh fish." And I told him, "Well, when I get married, I'm not going to set no nets. I'm going to buy my fish from the store." And then Uncle Ben and I were out setting net that one time. I was telling him that. I said, I always kind of feel guilty about setting net. I said, because what I said to my grandpa, I said, told him that by my own